Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Glamour's Hey, It's Okay podcast. Today, we have Fern Cotton with us to talk about everything from red carpet outfits to protests to that really cringy thing that she once did. Tune in. It's a very special treat we have today on the podcast. We have the pinup, the podcast pinup, as the iTunes reviews are telling us. Our associate director James Williams. Hello.
Oh, hello. I don't know about that, but thank you.
Ooh.
Hello.
Oh, don't fake your modesty around here. And we have, and interestingly, fun fact for everybody: Fern Cotton is actually technically a Glamour employee. She's a Glamour columnist, Glamour Award winner. But ironically, so far the hardest guest to book on the actual podcast, her diary. Hi, Fern Cotton.
You're basically, hello. You just told off.
Yeah, I know, by my boss.
Yeah.
I know. Well, it's mainly sort of children and childcare.
How dare they?
Gets in the way of
damn
stuff.
Them.
And then you nearly died of the flu.
Yeah, oh. Then I had the flu. Oh, the flu's horrible. Awful. I hated that. That was so sorry for cancelling that. That was. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I couldn't. I mean, if I'd been paid £1 billion, I couldn't have made it here.
So. But the lesson learned is do not bandy the word flu around.
No.
When you're feeling a bit under the weather.
No.
Real flu is like horrendous.
Is being told off by Joe because you didn't
well,
turn up to work.
Have you brought your doctor's note? I mean, standard policy.
Yeah. Awkward. Yeah.
Has the dog eaten your homework?
Yes. I haven't even got a dog, but yes.
Well, absolutely. I mean, as usual, you look absolutely the picture of health. So how are you feeling today?
Yeah, good. Very well and good and happy to be here.
Happy?
Yes.
Oh, she's good.
See what you did there.
Good. Yeah. So tell us, you are about to release a book.
Mm.
That's why you're here.
Yes.
Publication day is in 2 days.
Yes, exactly. It is the 9th of Feb, which is quite a terrifying prospect.
That's
actually.
My dad's birthday, so it's all going to be good.
It's a perfect day.
Yeah.
Perfect day. But I'm scared, but I'm excited.
Are you as excited or as scared as you were? Because obviously you've had a book before.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm way more nervous. I think with the cookbook, it was definitely a challenge, and it was a first for me doing stepping into that territory, so there were nerves around it, but I wasn't too bothered if people sort of judged me on it because it's a hobby that I love, whereas I think this book is much more of a sort of a vulnerable passion project where I've written about things really honestly, and I've sort of talked about sort of sides of me that I don't normally show. So people that have interviewed me in the last few weeks have been, oh, it's a departure for you. But I feel like it's the exact opposite. Everything else I do is kind of a tiny bit of my life. And actually, this is what I like to talk about and what I believe in and is actually the real me. So it's weird sort of revealing a whole other side of yourself to people that think, they go, oh, yeah, you, radio DJ or whatever they think you are, is a sort of a title. And I'm sort of peeling that back and going, oh, I'm a human. And this is all the sort of things I believe and that I'm happy to now show to you and see how that makes you feel.
Now it's called Happy. So what was the inspiration? What, tell me about it. How would you describe it in a nutshell?
Well, the sort of catalyst for the whole idea was feeling the absolute opposite of happy and feeling pretty dreadful, and that being a really pivotal moment and me then kind of looking at everything that I perceived as reality or just things that I'd kind of made myself part of. I had to just strip back everything and reevaluate everything and get a different perspective on everything in life, really. So I found writing really cathartic. So I used to write a lot anyway, and then spoke with my publishers of the cookbook, and they thought that there could be something in it. So it kind of started as a very organic process of me playing around with ideas and thoughts that I was having around this time, and it's ended up being a book.
And what's been for you, that was there one piece of one chapter we thought, I really don't know if I want to tell this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wrote, each part of the book is talking about, it's not all negative. There's lots of really happy, wonderful, positive sort of tools, and not tips, because I definitely haven't got anything sorted. This is not like a manual of how to be happy. This is almost a letter to myself as a reminder of all the things that I know but don't put into practice that hopefully people will find helpful. So I wrote all the good stuff first, and then I saved the happy not bit right till the end, because I just thought, I don't want to go back there. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to relive it. I don't want to have to go through it all again. So I saved that till the end. But actually, it was so therapeutic getting it all out and writing it and actually making peace with it. And it's been a bit of a full circle project in that way.
Really cathartic.
Yeah, massively.
Because that's the thing, half the stuff, you know, and I think, you know, people with therapy and stuff, they think, oh, you're going to go into it, you're going to dredge it all up, and it's actually going to make things worse. And it's not. It's about dealing with things you never really dealt with.
Well, yeah, otherwise it's just going to be there, stagnant, and it will come up and bite you on the arse when you're least expecting it. So I think making peace with lots of things that, or parts of your life that feel massively uncomfortable, it's really hard, but it's going to help.
But I think what you said is really interesting as well, because I think what you always think of, you go through tough times and you think, oh, you actually worry more about making other people feel uncomfortable. When in fact, you're just showing vulnerability does not make people uncomfortable. It actually makes you connect with people, I would argue.
That's been the most surprising thing, is since I've been talking about the book within my sort of friendship circles, I've had three friends come to me and say, I wish you'd told me, because I went through this exact thing 6 years ago. One of my friends yesterday texted me this because she just read the book, and I had no idea she'd been through any of this, and she had no idea I had. And I think that's one of the most sort of pertinent parts of the book, is talking about sharing, communicating, and being open with people.
And just to be clear, what we're talking about is you have suffering a bout of depression.
Yeah.
What was the fear for you in confronting that, do you think?
Loads of things. I think personally, because like you say, James, I didn't want to drudge it all up and sort of make it bigger than it seemed in my memory and in my head. And then also, I feel like sometimes when you're really vulnerable and open, obviously you're putting yourself out there, so you are going to get reactions of a varying degree. You're going to get a whole spectrum of different thoughts thrown at you. And I wanted to be in a place where I felt so comfortable talking about it that whatever anyone said to me, comments they had, thoughts, ideas, assumptions, that I could then, you know, not necessarily retaliate, but actually say, look, this is my story. And whether you agree, disagree, or, you know, encourage people to do similar things to what I'm talking about, then I'm still happy that what I've written has come from my open heart, and that I 100% believe in it. So I had to get to that place before I could sort of write about it.
And what has been the reaction?
Well, only a sort of handful of people have read it so far. Okay. But weirdly, when I was writing it, nobody had even a peek at it. Only my editor. So my husband didn't read it. My mum didn't read it. Nobody. So I was terrified when, first of all, a copy editor read it. And then when she sent back notes, I got really upset and sort of agitated, like, this person I've never met is telling me what's what. And once I sort of got around the fact that that's her job, it all became a bit easier. And then a few of my friends and family members have read it since. And they've all been really lovely and amazing and I think quite surprised, because a lot of stuff I'd never talked about to anyone. So it's been lovely.
It's such a double-edged sword, I think, when somebody in your position admits to those things. On the one hand, we years ago did a cover story with Frankie Bridge, talking about her depression, and I got equal amounts of people saying, oh my god, if this can happen to somebody in her position, then I feel so much better about getting help, because it can happen to anybody. Yeah. On the other hand, I got people going, what she got to be unhappy about, which I find really upsetting, because to me, that's what stops people coming forward.
Yeah.
Are you, and I think that, you know, listening to you talk now and knowing you as I do, it's so hard to see you in that mold.
Yeah.
You're really pretty. You're really successful. You seemingly have everything.
But it doesn't discriminate, does it? Depression's one of those things.
Well, no, and it doesn't make you immune to anything. No. Like, yeah. The facts of my job that I love and enjoy and grab hold of are the fact that I get to have an outlet and a creative flow probably daily, and that is why I'm lucky. Not because I'm on the telly, not because I get to wear nice clothes, none of those sorts of things. It's because I love my job.
Yeah.
You know, if I was really into pottery or, I don't know, whatever other thing that I could love, if I was able to do that as a job, that is lucky. That is amazing. So that bit, yeah, I am extremely lucky to do a job I love. All the other stuff that people think comes with my job or assume that is in my life may or may not be true. That's, you know, up for judgment, sure. But it certainly doesn't affect experiences I've had. It doesn't make me immune to shock, trauma, loss, bereavement, anger, whatever. All those sort of, you know, things that we perceive as negative emotions. And it certainly doesn't stop me going down a route if I'm mentally that way inclined. So, yeah, I can understand that some people's reaction might be along those lines. People that have experienced it, I don't think they would jump to those assumptions
because
they know,
or
if they've had someone in their family. But then anyone else, you know, who hasn't been through that experience, they can sit and judge. That's fine. They haven't lived it, and that's okay.
One thing I've learned about all the mental health work we do at Glamour is that no bad ever comes of talking about this stuff, ever.
Absolutely.
And quite the opposite, always.
And I think that's the thing. I think, you know, the word overshare has become so embedded in our vernacular now, but I actually think it's also creating, there is a balance, you know, that you don't have to overshare if you can just share on a level that doesn't make everyone uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? I think,
although if you fancy doing that on the podcast, that's totally
it makes for great radio.
But so that's out on Thursday the 9th.
That's right, yes.
Harry Elvin's birthday and Fern Cotton's book's birthday.
Double celebration.
Happy. Now, Fern, you haven't been to a Glamour Features meeting, but this is almost the same.
Where okay, we sort of hit like, me.
Yeah, we debate some really important stuff and then some not very important stuff. One thing I feel really strongly about, it's such a stupid topic, but is it okay to only be interested in the outfits at award shows? We're coming into award season.
Very topical.
You know, I don't shy away from this stuff, James. That's what you've got to know about
absolutely,
me.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Pulitzer
the
is on the way.
Big issues.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It kind of is a big issue because I understand, and I want to know what you think as a bit of a red carpet queen yourself. You know, you watch the Oscars and there's that huge feminist movement, the hashtag Ask Her More. I totally respect and understand the sentiment of that. Little quiet whisper voice, I'm actually only interested in the outfits when it comes to the Oscars. I go to bed before anybody wins anything.
Well, it's on very late.
Yeah, it is.
I just want to know
very late.
Who's wearing
But is that,
your,
yeah. Is that, that okay?
I don't know, is it?
But it's great that you're admitting that because there are a lot of people that will go, oh, no, blah, blah, but actually are thinking that. So that's good that you're saying it. I think there's room for it all. I think there's room for every element. It's theatre. It's a whole big dramatic showcase of theatre. And whether you're in it because you're a film buff and you love seeing who's won what, brilliant, but if you love fashion, like that's a main part of your job, isn't it?
Well, my thing is, now this is, please don't anybody tweet me angrily, I'm not saying that I don't care about anything else that say Emma Stone has got to say, but for me it's the only reason that I watch any of these award shows is to see. I just think in that context, let me just have the fun.
Yeah, enjoy the bit you like.
I think, you're right. There is. It's all about context. And I think the problem is now, I think, and this would be interesting, if you were on a red carpet now, I think, and I would certainly feel somewhat scared of asking, oh, and who are you wearing? It's almost become a bit of a dirty question.
But I really, really want to know that.
Well, I think it's fine. I mean, where I think you're right, it's about balance, it's about context. Of course you can ask that person. And also, I can say as a man, I'm as interested in what the men are wearing. And I think where it got a bit off kilter was it was only ever aimed at the women, wasn't it? And I think where it really reached a bit of a low was when they started doing the heel cams or the manny cams.
The heel cam and the manny cam is a bit much.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is as well, is for men, they're just wearing a black suit.
Now, like, come on, Fern.
Come on, they're just wearing...
Oh, that's so sexist. So
some of them rock it much better than others, though, don't they?
But
come
maybe
on.
Maybe they've got a red neckerchief or something. I don't know.
Listen, James Williams pulls it out the bag every Glamour.
You do. You may be an exception.
Yeah.
But it is. But we can have a lot more fun
that's
as women
true.
In the clothing department. We can be as, you know, sort of demure and laid back or as absolutely extravagant and ridiculous as we like. And it's harder for men to do that. So there is more intrigue for women's outfits, naturally.
I would also argue that who you are wearing at the Oscars or the SAGs or the Golden Globes spawns quite a massive economy. People, you know, if you're wearing Gucci, then that's a big deal for them and their business. So I actually don't think it's that trivial.
Isn't there like a factory somewhere up north that literally churns out knockoff dresses of the
more
Oscars?
Than likely. If not, I'm starting one.
Every morning, I'm sure they do.
You know what I've got more of a problem with? The phrase of having to say, who are you wearing? When I used to do the red carpet, I used to go, can I just say, what are you wearing?
It is a really creepy phrase.
Who are you wearing?
But then if you say, what are you wearing? One of my favourite ever red carpet moments, someone saying, Nicole Kidman, Nicole, what are you wearing? She went, a dress.
I mean,
fantastic. So that's what you're risking when you ask, what are you wearing?
I'm fine with that. Who are you wearing? I'm not from California. Yeah. I just can't pull it off.
I haven't dragged on a carcass and you know, it does have those kind of horrible connotations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What's the dumbest thing you've ever been asked in that situation?
Or asked.
Probably that is more prevalent in my memory bank. God, both are a blur. But I mean, I do get mistaken for other people and that's fun. Yeah. I've had people go, Holly, nope, Fern Britton, try again, still not
bless.
There, so that's always fun.
Aren't you tempted? I used to get mistaken on the front row at New York Fashion Week for Toni Collette.
Well, that's a great thing.
And I used to think, fabulous. There's a couple of times where people from, say, Us Weekly magazine, we go, Toni, and I had the Australian accent as
go
well.
So,
and
they were so fooled, they were like, what?
No, but I could have really stitched her up, I could have made all these outlandish, controversial statements, and they would have happily printed them up as
Toni
Collette's.
Also, you've just reminded me of when I bumped into you in a restaurant with my mum and dad. My mum actually called you Fern Britton, I think.
Yeah, I think that may have happened. That
cool
is
old
true.
Mum, well done. Bless her.
That must be how Ant and Dirk feel.
I know. Which way are you again? Yeah.
Well, Henson, the left of the... Do you and Holly do that? Do you have a side when you're together?
No. I mean,
you
on the
don't look anything
stage,
alike.
And I think they just sort of think blonde, bird, cooler, one of them lot. Fern, Tess, Holly, just whatever.
So, to recap, am I just the worst, most shallow human alive?
No.
I don't think you should be embarrassed or ashamed of wanting to know, but I do think, you know, there is room to ask more, dare I say, without being a bit too sort of, you
also,
know,
it's what
right
show,
on.
It's what show you're watching, isn't it? If you're going to watch E!, they're going to ask about the clothes. If you're going to watch something that's on Sky Arts, it might be more film-related.
Also,
where you go
also, I would
it.
Argue, though, let's not kid ourselves, we know for a fact that those actresses spend hours, I mean, possibly
hours.
Days getting ready, weeks
you,
preparing
James.
For
otherwise
it.
Otherwise, so they'd wear a tracksuit.
Don't pretend, exactly. So don't pretend you don't give a shit about what you're wearing or how you look. So don't get old narky about when we ask you about it.
I love it when James gets forceful. And on that note...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, everybody, we are absolutely loving reading your reviews on iTunes. If you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Glamour Hey It's Okay, search for that, leave a review, and you might win a prize from your pals at Glamour.
They will win a prize, Joe.
And it's, guys, it's not a bribe. you know, if you can leave me an impressively insulting review, that might win as well.
There is an element of skill to this. It's not,
But I really, really do. I'm going to give it to a nice one today from Mouseketeer. Thank you for all your reviews. Mouseketeer says, I promised myself that I would walk for a half an hour each day this year to give myself some time to forget about my emails, the madness that is 2017. The podcast has been my walking buddy, and I've enjoyed so much that I've listened to every episode. Aww. Love the self-deprecating and smart chat from these ladies. And James. Thank you, Glamour Podcast. Thank you, Mouseketeer. You're getting a little something-something in the goodie bag.
That's lovely. Thank you.
Mouseketeer, if you want to email into glamourheyitsok@condenast.co.uk, then we will send out your prize. Congratulations.
That's why we've got Cat Brownie, because I always forget something.
Very important, Bob.
Okay, so this one is a little bit actually more serious. Is it okay, Fern and James, to just not protest things? Protesting is really having a moment, isn't it? Mm. I mean, there's just so much activism and anger in the world for various reasons. Myself and a few other Glamour staff actually did march in the Women's March in January. And I'll be honest, that's the first time I've ever marched. I felt strongly about it. I've felt strongly about other issues, but never felt like me actually getting out on the pavement would really make much difference. But I wanted to be part of a volume of people showing the discontent about certain things. Now, but I kind of understand people who just think, that's not me. What do we think?
I mean, we talked about this actually in the features meeting just the other day. Yeah. And I'll be honest, I feel like there is such doom and gloom going on, especially on the newsfeed. And I did love that thing that went viral a few weeks ago about, you know, the sort of piss take of the BBC breaking news. And you say, what the fuck now? You know, because every time you see that, you just think, oh no, what now?
Terrifying.
And there's so much bad shit going on that I have to say, I think you're going one of two ways. I'm finding some of my friends are either becoming incredibly politically engaged, they're becoming really well read about it, they're doing their homework and they're getting out there, and I applaud them for it. But on the flip side of that, I think there are a lot of people, myself included to a certain degree, that actually it's also awful. I'm kind of burying my head in the sand and putting my fingers in my ears and just going la 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 la, because you start thinking about it and you just go down a vortex of like, oh my god, the world is fucked.
But that's why I think people go out and march. I think there's two things. If you're feeling like that and you've got that anger, frustration, irritation, actually going out and doing anything, it hasn't got to be marching. Marching is a great way of being around a lot of like-minded people and feeling part of something.
Yeah.
But I think you're expelling that energy by getting out and doing it. Or if you're going out and, you know, there's so much injustice in this world. Yeah. If you are actually out there doing good, you're helping it rather than sort of just sat there ranting about it over a cup of tea or feeling angry about it inside. You're putting that energy into a positive and you're making it, and you are, even if it's a tiny difference, you're still making a difference. And I think also, for, you know, I wanted to go on the women's march desperately. I was looking after my gorgeous baby, so I couldn't do it. But so many of my friends went, and again on their first marches, and had the most brilliant, empowering day. And for naysayers that think there is no point and that it's just a useless, sort of operation, it isn't, because people know about it. Mm. So people instantly, people are talking about it, so it becomes bigger.
I've really got no time for that. Oh, it's not going to do anything. Of course, because it is. I think if there's a movement of people who feel this way, what in a democracy, what other choice do you have? What other way do you have outside of elections to express
exactly
how you're feeling?
And showing the vast number that agree, going out with that many people and showing that you are against something that.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly why I did it. I wanted.
Yeah.
Our world leaders to look at it and go, oh, that's a lot of people who feel like
yes.
this.
Yeah. Maybe we should listen to this. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think to get the world talking about it and to get youngsters talking about it on social media, to get, you know, especially with the sort of female movement, to get, you know, younger women thinking about being female in a very different way, whether it struck a chord with them or not, it's definitely going to bring a few ideas up of, God, maybe, you know, I have experienced this or that, or I have thought about being a female in a different way. Then I think that's really important as well. Especially having a daughter myself.
Yeah. I was on holiday, sadly, for the Women's March. I definitely would have been there. And I have to say, I actually landed at the holiday, the resort, and I literally got my phone and I was on Instagram. I was so, like, I actually got quite emotional about it. I just thought
it was
so incredible. All the pictures and the turnout being, what was it, 10 times what they were expecting it to be.
Yeah.
And it was actually one of those things that did actually jolt me out of my, dare I say, complacency. It was one of the things I actually thought, God, there's a reason why people do this. Mm. And this is why you should get out there and do it. And you shouldn't bury your head in the sand.
I suppose back to the original point, I don't really begrudge people who just feel aside from that. Mm. As long as they're not sitting aside and going, well, that's rubbish.
Yeah, there's loads of pluses. I think also feeling like part of a community, that's so lovely. And whatever, you know, if you're a football fan or you like a band and you will go and congregate with those like-minded people, it's an even more powerful version of that, getting together with loads of people that completely agree with you. That's so empowering and makes that stronger.
And I just feel it's a bit like goes hand in hand with, I don't understand women that say they're not feminists. Do you know what I mean? Some things become,
that's a really good point.
Being politicised isn't a dirty word, and you shouldn't be embarrassed about being, you know, really engaged about, you know, and really passionate about politics.
To me, that Women's March was the start of something this year, the start of a new sort of wave of people feeling awake and engaged and ready to be vigilant about things that we need to speak up about.
And like you said, Fen, that we're not alone. You know, there are like-minded people out there. It's not totally going down the toilet, you know?
And can I just say, I hate crowds. But I really, I needed to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We've agreed to talk about this topic, but we are already, all three of us, breaking out in a sweat, blotching at the necks, and just feeling generally like we want to scream.
Yeah.
Is it okay? Well, I don't know if it's okay or not, but we all do. Is it okay to still be dying of embarrassment from that thing from maybe 5 years ago? We all do it, right?
Yeah, I think
how do you get over it?
People who say they're over stuff, I have no regrets. Rubbish, bollocks, they are lying. Mm. I have thousands of regrets and moments that make my toes curl. Still now, years later.
And that's the thing, if you think of it in the middle of the night, that's it, you just feel sick and can't get back to sleep.
Insomnia.
Like it just happened.
Yeah, tons of those.
No, it's really funny because I caught that episode of Friends the other day. You know when Rachel said, I just don't embarrass easily on that plane, and they end up drawing on each other's faces and it's permanent. And I just don't believe people that don't feel embarrassed. But then I think there are some people that are just, they just don't, they don't sweat it. And I just wish I was one of those people, because I literally beat myself over with a stick constantly about all the stupid things I've done, said.
Same. I thought I was unselfconscious until James and I found ourselves at a Beyonce dance class the other day and had to strut in front of
people. Holy hell.
It was one of the most testing things. Only because, we actually realised it would have been easier if you'd been there with a bunch of strangers.
Or drunk.
But we were doing it with all of the glamour work colleagues in the Gap store on Oxford Street. So, you know, what's to be embarrassed about here? Nothing to see.
I like you, James. I think I probably feel embarrassment at least once a day.
Yeah.
I'll go home and then think, I shouldn't have said that to that person. Or, God, was that awkward when that
happened? Wasn't it awful?
I dissect everything constantly. My overworking brain cannot stop.
And we've not even talked about when alcohol comes into play, obviously, because
horrific.
You know. But the one thing I have to say, I had this epiphany a few years ago, and it still doesn't really help, but I always try to tell myself this, because, you know, if you've done something on a drunken night out, you've said something, or, you know, you've basically put your foot in it or offended somebody, you will wake up and you'll go, oh my God, you're an idiot. And you'll proceed to think about how much of an idiot you are. You'll replay that thought, what you did, over and over again. And then I suddenly realised, but, you know, the person you may have done that in front of or to literally woke up this morning, thought about it once, and then hasn't thought about it for the rest of the day.
Forever again.
But you, meanwhile, sit there in a pit of self-loathing, literally replaying it, like, on repeat. You know,
it's the worst.
What's the worst that you will admit to?
I mean, I've got, that I would admit to is the thing in brackets here. So there's loads, but a couple of specifics I can pull out of the memory bank. One was when I turned up very enthusiastically, aged about 18, for quite a big sort of job interview / meeting, bounded into the office, blah, 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 and I was a day early. And I was so desperate for this gig. And then I didn't go back the next day because I felt like such a...
Because I think that just tells you everything you need to know about Fair Con.
Oh, it was so cringe. And it was quite a cool kind of office and quite cool people. And they weren't particularly sort of over-soothing to help me in this
that's
matter.
Awful.
It was the pits. Oh. But actually, this one's way worse. So a long time ago, I'd been on a first date with someone. God. And it'd gone well. We'd had a really nice time. I didn't know this person very well, and it was very exciting. And then the next day, I was obviously retelling the whole story to one of my best friends, and I was saying, you know, not all the gory details, but sort of giving her enough juice to sort of really get excited on her way to work. And I was walking to work myself, and I was being a bit complacent. I was sort of drinking a coffee, walking, skipping probably, you know, very overexcited. And I text something about how I had definitely gauged the fact that he was also really into me. And I text him.
Oh, no.
Thanks, Kat, for reiterating how mortifying that is.
That's the classic.
Exactly. It was too much of a cliche, and I managed to fulfil it.
I presume it's not the guy you ended up marrying.
No. Yeah. No, that was not the start of our marriage. It was awful.
That's almost as good as that recent story we did in the magazine about, the perils of Uber, and especially Uber pooling. And this one girl told a story where she got in an Uber pool. And for those of you who haven't done it, you essentially share a taxi ride with a stranger.
Right, right.
Got in.
End of days.
And there were two... Exactly. There were the two destinations anyway. She got in with this guy, started chatting, and the guy was asking a question. She said, "Oh yeah, I'm going for a date. I'm meeting this guy. He's really hot. I really, really like him." La la. Just basically proceeded to spill about how much she fancied him, how much she thought he could be the one. She was going to get married, have his babies. And they got to the restaurant, and then she realised he was the guy. Talk about bummy boiler.
Yeah, that sort of brings bile to the throat, doesn't
but
it?
I think embarrassment's healthy. The rush of blood to the face will keep us young and youthful.
I like that.
Looks like we've run out of time.
Oh my god,
we
haven't even told ours. I'll just say sleepwalking naked, Fern. I'll take yours and raise you by a sleepwalking naked and having to wake up your neighbours in the middle of the night to let you in.
That beats mine.
Let's just say from now on at the Glamour Women of the Year Awards, I will make doubly sure that the toilet door is locked.
who walked in?
Don't know, but she screamed, whoever she was. Oh, you guys, this has been one of my favourites.
I've got sweat
so
on.
So much
it's warm
fun.
In here.
Yeah. And we know even more stories that Fern, wouldn't tell actually on the podcast.
We thought we knew you quite well, Fern. We've learned a bit more today.
We're going to have to get you back for volume two, right?
I'm well up for that.
So, now, before I let you go, I just want to tell everybody that you are going to be coming along to the Glamour Beauty Festival.
Yay. I am.
And being a special guest of ours on the Saturday 11th of March and Sunday the 12th of March at London's Saatchi Gallery.
Yeah.
Log on to glamour.com for all your ticket details. Not only do you get to see amazing people in conversation like Fern with other amazing people.
Yeah, Amelia Freer, actually. Fern's going to be chatting to Amelia Freer.
So fun last year.
Legendary nutritionist and dietitian. But every ticket holder will walk away with a £190 goodie bag full of beauty products.
What's not to love about that, right? Come on.
It's such a fabulous weekend.
You're a member of Star Fern, so you don't get one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I didn't get one last year. I'll just point that out.
Sort that out for you. Thank you so much, James Williams.
Thank you.
And thank you, Fern Cotton. Everybody, go and get happy out this Thursday.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.